introduce the second of tonight's speakers, is my very good friend, Morris.
Thanks, Charlie. My name's Morris, I'm an addict. And it's a great honour and privilege to be speaking here tonight. It's an honour and a privilege to be speaking at any NA meeting. And I'd like to just start with actually what my day was like today. And then I'll tell you how I got here. And you'll see the slight change of behaviour and lifestyle that has happened through coming to Narcotics Anonymous. In recovery, I've got married, and I've got three wonderful children. I shouldn't mention them. Which have been a gift of getting clean again. After relapsing, after being 9 years clean. And last week I celebrated 10 years clean.
Well,
man. And, thank you. So if there's anyone here who's relapsed or relapsed after some time, I'm proof that you can get clean again and you can stay clean a day at a time. And as I said, I got married and I've got three wonderful children. I've got a boy, Nathaniel, who's 5 and a half, and I've got a delightful twins of nearly three, who are Sophia and Jacob, and their mother's on an advanced teacher training yoga course for the last 3 days, so I've been on child duty. And I'm wondering if it's my age sometimes, but these three people run me ragged. And, you know, I used to be the most important person in my wife's life, apart from her recovery. Then we had Nathaniel, so I went down. Then we had the twins, so I went further down. Then we got a cat, and I went further down. And I'm last on the pecking order, but there you go. I suppose that's life. But so the three of them got up at 5:45. They got into my bed. They got me out of my bed. They took over the bed. There's three of them with three different iPads. With Peppa Pig on. And I've all of a sudden, I've got a king size, a massive king size bed. I'm out the bed, downstairs, getting them juices, getting them what they need, come back upstairs. I want to get dressed first. No, I want to get dressed. So anyway, so that went on. I got them dressed. Two went to nursery, took them to nursery, took the other one to school. Had to rush and do some business in Brighton, come back from Brighton because I live in Sussex now. Got back to meet the gardener because he needed to get paid, and then rushed to pick the twins up. And it was Red Nose Day, and they got red all over their face and things, Daddy, look at me! And anyway, so I've had all that, and then I've had to get them home, get them cleaned up, go and pick my other son up, meet the babysitter, who hasn't been before, and had to tell her 3 million instructions in 10 minutes, so I could make sure I caught the train that I was going to catch to come here. And spoke to my wife, who's on her way home from Cambridge, and I got here. And that is, I mean, I normally do a lot more work than just a couple of hours this morning, but that is, and I spoke to a few people in recovery, and that is a day of my life now. Sometimes more hectic, these three little people run my life. In between that, you know, I have got my recovery, but they have brought such joy to my life and such happiness as something that I never thought I'd be having. And as I say, that's a day in the life of this recovering addict. And now I'll tell you how I got here. And it's a slightly different story. I've been coming to meetings for 31 years. My first meeting was on November the 27th, 1984. Prior to that, I'd come from a nutty family like most of us do, or a lot of us do. It certainly wasn't normal. And I came from a poor part of East London. Not that, you know, mind you, now there's some rich parts of East London. There wasn't when I was young. And my mother brought me and my half-brother and sister up the best she could. She did the best she could, God rest her soul. And I hated school. I really wanted to get out of my head as soon as possible. It took a little while to get there. And, I met someone when I was quite young. I was with someone for 4 years, that didn't work. I met someone else in a blackout and got married to her. And I say that not as it's the absolute truth, you know. I'd finished with someone who I was in love with. I was paralytic drunk in a pub in Ludgate Circus. I met this girl who was with someone else, of course. And we started seeing each other behind his back. He started coming to see me and saying, "There's something wrong with my bird. She's been funny with me." I said, "Oh, I don't know. Oh, it sounds a bit strange." Anyway, cut a long story short, we've ended up, I've got caught, I got beaten up to a degree. I held him down, said, "Look, you know, let's go and see her." It was like something out of a movie. We got in a car to her house in Manor Park, and she had to choose between me and him. I say now, unfortunately, she chose me. So there was a whole lot of stuff that she ended up sleeping with my best friend, surprise, surprise. How you meet them is how you lose them. And there was a message there. You know, I'd nicked her from someone and she was nicked by someone else, you know. Hello. And so then, you know, I had a little girl with my ex-wife. She took her away when she was about 7 months old. And then, anyway, cut a long story short, I didn't see her again for 24 years. That's another story. We haven't got enough time this evening, but I will mention it at a later point. And I had a house. I was living in Essex, and I had a guy who was desperate. He had nowhere to live. And, you know, one of those typical stories. He needed somewhere to stay. He was taking drugs, but not the drugs I was taking. I was only drinking 2 bottles of brandy a day, taking loads of barbiturates called Tunol, about 10, 15 a day. I was lifting weights because I thought that would keep me a little bit stable while I'm taking these barbiturates. And my using was quite contained at the time. It was all right. You know, I was in control of it. And I ended up, numerous car accidents, numerous dribbling of the mouth. People used to find it quite amusing when I was on barbiturates because I'd slump to the side, I'd be dribbling, my mouth would be wide open, and they'd play games, they'd have bets to see who could get something in my mouth while I was dribbling. It was a very pleasant game for everyone else, but not me. And cut a long story short, I ended up started using heroin in a short space of time. I had a house, I lost the house, I lost everything else. I thought, I really need to get out of this mess I'm in. I need to start again. What can I do? Oh, I'll go to Los Angeles. And that was my best thinking. I went to Los Angeles. I met someone who's now been clean for many years, who was living in Los Angeles in a club called the Rainbow Bar. He saw me chasing heroin. He thought, oh, I haven't had any of that for a long time. We became best friends. He injected me with cocaine for the first time in my life, gave me a wonderful experience that I hadn't experienced before, opened my eyes to a whole new world. I heard Big Ben in Los Angeles, decided this was for me. I don't want the heroin anymore. This is wonderful. lost the use of my arms very quickly. This wonderful new way of life. Oh, by the way, I bought a passport, an illegal passport, to go and have this new identity in LA. No one should ever know me. I was there 24 hours. Some guy came walking down the street and went, "Hello, Morris!" And you know, it was just typical of the way things... So this new life that I was going to have lasted 9.5 weeks, a bit like the movie, but not as exciting. And I came back penniless, having to face quite a serious court case, and with a crack habit, which I never knew at the time. You know, it was freebase then. I think it was a nicer word, freebase, than crack. More posh, wouldn't it, really? Or I've been freebasing. And so I came back, and in a short period of time, I ended up in prison. So I came out of prison after 2 years, and two guys who are still in the fellowship took me to my first meeting, and... Yeah, I'd been out of prison for 3 days. I came to my first meeting. It was an old meeting that doesn't exist anymore now. And I did what most new people do. I sat at the back of the room. I listened. I observed. I took everyone's inventory. Too many people were smiling. Too many people were happy. People were touching each other. Literally touching. You could see they went out the room and they put their arms around each other. This isn't right. And I bounced in and out of recovery for, I don't know, let's roll the film right forward, too many times, 30 days, 60 days, you know, January, it's cold, or what can I do, it's cold, use. Summer, it's warm, what can I do, use. You know, there was like... There was no basis of, like, a strong foundation, a good recovery. Anything, any reason to use, I ended up using. There was periods of abstinence. But anyway, 7 treatment centres later, numerous lengths of clean time, I ended up, in the West Country twice. I've been in... You know, I've been in places where they wanted you to stay for a year and I lasted a day. They were we're going to strip you. You know, I remember one, they were going to strip me and you must be abstinent. And I went there and I took 10 Mogadon, because that's all I had. And I had 10 left and I hid them. And this was this place where everyone had to be clean for a year. Anyway, they'd fallen off a windowsill. And there was people that were, you know, patients that were finding them as they were gardening. You know, and I went into that. They wanted to talk to me. And I went into, you know, that most chairs in meetings are quite uncomfortable. Well, if you've had quite a lot of Mogadon, they become quite comfortable. And I started sliding down this chair because they were discussing whether this guy should be allowed home for a weekend after 6 months. And I thought, oh, dear, this is... Anyway, they said, you need to go away and think of why you came in here. I did. I never went back. And it might have worked for someone. It certainly wasn't going to work for me. I think treatment centres are a wonderful thing, but my experience has been any foundation of recovery I was going to get was going to be coming to meetings. It wasn't going to be in the treatment centre. I learned all the dialogue, all the jargon. You know, I knew how to deflect conversations in groups. We're all very good at that, you know. And like, why are you sitting like that? You know, the whole nonsense that goes on in treatment centres in groups. It's like bizarre. Anyway, thank God I'm not there today. And I ended up... I was living in Portobello Road. I was nearly 3 years clean, and I decided to use again. And I always share this because I had a nice flat, I had a nice car, I had not a bad business. And 2.5 years later, on this particular relapse, I was destitute. homeless, living on the Isle of Wight in the winter, not a good look, and looking out at the sea in a holiday town with no one around, going to a doctor who you could see quite resentfully hated the fact that he was dealing with an addict, and having to go every week to get this methadone script to pour in my cans of Tennent's or special brew just to, like, as a little cocktail. So I'd drink a bit, pour it in, shake it about, do the okey cokey, and drink this horrible liquid. And then every 2 weeks I was getting a housing check, and I'd come back up to Harrow Road. I'd stay in numerous squats, do the crack and the smack until the money ran out, and go back to the Isle of Wight into this bed and breakfast. And it wasn't a pleasant existence, and I ended up about 6 stone lighter than I am now, and with layers of clothes on to try and fill myself out a bit, with the petrified that I had to go into the off licence and ask for 4 cans a day. And I was in this B&B, and I've shared it numerous times, but it's, you know, it's something I always need to remember, which I did forget after relapsing again. But the guy in the bed and breakfast would knock on the door at 8 o'clock and tell me, say, breakfast! And I'd be pouring a sweat between 7 and 8, because I knew I was going to have to go, OK! And never go. Never went to breakfast, because I was petrified. I didn't want anyone to see the state I was in. And cut a long story short, I ended up getting 12-stepped by someone that I'd sponsored, who drove me around the bend, and was a nightmare sponsee. But he helped me get back in the rooms, and I did loads of meetings, I did loads of service, I got involved, and I stayed clean for 9 years and 2 months. And at 5, I lost my mother when, God rest her soul, Renee. I lost her when I was 2 years clean. I went bankrupt at 4 years clean. I got cancer at 5 years clean. And I remember when I'd been diagnosed with cancer on the steps of Chelsea and Westminster Hospital. I come out, they said, oh, we have to have you in right away. I said, oh, no, I've got things to do. And the things to do was that I was petrified. The things to do, I couldn't cope with the fact of what I'd just been told. And what happened was I think I was 5 years clean, and I think my faith left me that day. My belief in that whatever happens, I could stay clean, left me that day. And regardless that 2 years later I cleared the cancer, and regardless that I'd had a load of support and I'd got through it, through NA, something inside me changed. And I believe everyone, well, nearly everyone I know, has got their own rule book. And there's things you'll do and there's things you don't do. And I all of a sudden started ticking all of the I don't do. And my behaviour went completely off the wall. I was still going to meetings, I was still doing service, but my behaviour as a recovering addict had gone out the window. And I share this for myself and for everyone else in this room. Something changed at 5 years clean, and the bullet didn't hit me until I was 9 years and 2 months clean. It chipped away for 4 years and 2 months before I used again. But I was using everything else. My behaviour was of a using addict. Everything was okay. And I've got to say it, it's very easy to, you know, I hung around with a lot of people who were clean then and are clean now. Have been clean over 20 years, 25 years, and a few of them, they all had a belief that you could do whatever you wanted as long as you didn't use. And I hung around with like-minded people who believed that, but they didn't relapse. I did. I was the one who had to go back and experience the misery again. I was the one who had to go back and nearly die again. They stayed clean. The evidence was, I can't do whatever I want to stay clean. My behaviour will catch up with me, because it's always caught up with me. Every time I think I can get away with something, I've always been caught. You know, I tried burglary when I was using. You know, I think I lasted 3 minutes, I got caught. I've tried, you know, I'm not that type of person, but my using will make me do things that I don't want to do. And my behaviour clean, my illness wants me to do things that are going to make me use again. So whether it be around money, whether it be around sex, whether it be about fixing, whether it be about gambling, there is so many different assets of what make me up as a person that want to get me. And I didn't think I'd use again. I thought the rock bottom on the Isle of Wight, looking out at the sea, drinking with drunks on a bench, drinking cans of Tennent's, wetting myself, being homeless, destitute. I'll never forget that. How can anyone forget how bad that was? Well, I did. 9 years later, I forgot how bad it was. And I ended up, which is such a justification, I was sleeping with someone I didn't want to be sleeping with, who I found quite unstimulating, to put it politely. And she wasn't in recovery and she used to like a joint. So I thought I'd get her some skunk to liven up the proceedings. And so my justification of getting this skunk was for her. So I was getting a skunk, nothing changed, nothing got livened up. And I ended up with this skunk in my car one day, not praying in the morning, not speaking to my sponsor, forcing myself to go to meetings when I didn't really want to go to meetings, taking my dog for a walk. I was living in Hove at the time, and I've taken the dog for a walk, and I thought, 9 years and 2 months clean, I'd have a joint of skunk. Just like that. And I had this joint, it was like taking acid 20 years before. I'd been straight for a long time. This joint, I thought I was hallucinating. I was frightened that I weren't going to get the dog back in the car. I was frightened I was going to get back to where I lived. And I thought, wow, a heroin and crack addict. I've had a joint of skunk and look at me. Maybe I can just do this. 3 weeks later, I'm at this dealer's. He says to me, I said, can I have a gram of that coke? He said, oh, you don't use that. I said, no, it's not for me. And he'd run out of skunk. He was selling just ordinary grass and it wasn't going to do it. So maybe I'd just get a gram of coke. I'll go and get a gram of coke. I'll go straight to a hardware shop. I'll buy ammonia. I'll go back. I haven't washed up for nearly 9.5 years. Don't know what I'm doing, and I ruined it. I ended up, I think, getting about 2 licks out of this gram. I was jarred, like, yeah. Pouring a sweat in March. Flown back down the street with the dog. Boom, boom. Hello. Oh, hello, mate, you all right? I said, yeah, not bad. I said, can I get another gram? He said, oh. He said, what, you seen your friend? I said, yeah, he likes it. And that was it. We was off and running. I tried fixing. I couldn't find a vein. So now, from being in really horrible squats and in horrible toilets, I mean, that's one thing you certainly learn through using, is the wonder of a nice clean toilet to a proper Kazi, and I've used in a lot of those, and all of a sudden I'm in this nice house that I've rented in Hove, and I've been using for about 2 days. I'm in a kitchen that, if you look straight ahead, leads to the front door. I'm crawling on the kitchen floor. I'm sure there's someone looking through the letterbox. They think I don't know. I know you're there. I'm going to wait till you go. So I'm doing this. Now, thank God I've got a sense of humour. But after being clean for 9 years, within 2 days, I was back to exactly where I was, if not worse, because I was in a clean house. I was in a quite a nice environment, and I'm crawling, and I'm hiding, and I've gone and tried fixing. I've bought a packet of syringes, and I've gone through 10 1-mil syringes because they're the only syringes I could use. I had blood pouring down my arm. I was crying. I had congealed blood. I'm crawling on the floor. I'm trying to get another pipe. I need to go and get another gram. And this was in the space for a few days of picking up again. And I ended up, you know, in a terrible state. I ended up using heroin again. And I ended up... I wasn't broke. I nearly was, but I wasn't. And someone knew someone who had a treatment centre, so I ended up getting... I'd got arrested for selling dodgy DVDs, pirate DVDs, and I'd got nicked again, and it was all happening. It was all on its way. And, I bumped into a friend in recovery. They said, "Oh, why don't you go into treatment?" I went, "Yes, yes." "Oh, go, where?" And they said, "South Africa." I said, "Go on, I'm going." They took my card, they booked the flight. 5 days later, I'm dribbling at Heathrow Airport. I've gone back to the old reliable Mogadon. I've had a handful of them to get me on the plane. I'm with three recovering addicts in the car giving me a lift to the airport. I've rolled a joint of skunk, crack and heroin and asked them, "Do you mind if I just smoke this?" They just want to get me out of the car, because by now I'm already dribbling, I'm pouring with sweat. They just want me out the country as soon as possible. They've gone, smoke it. "Can you please open the window?" So they got me to the airport. I've ended up in Johannesburg in a rehab. Of course, everyone was not clean enough. How could they really teach me anything? I've heard it all before. They don't know what they're doing. Who are these people? They don't even speak English. And, again, not being willing, not wanting help, thinking I know all the answers. I'm desperate one day and I'm Superman the next. So I've ended up, leaving this treatment centre with some girl who came in for a 2-week detox, was pinned out of a nut in a treatment centre of 50 people. I looked over there, she looked at me, we went bang! And as I'm well known in the past, I must say, as International Rescue Thunderbirds, I decided I was going to rescue this girl, and we left treatment centre just after Boxing Day, and we ended up in a hotel room, her overdosing, me having to slap her around the face and get her in a shower and bring her back to life, and... my fantasy was wild sex, drink, joint, a few pipes, quick boot. I've ended up with someone nearly dying, crawling around this hotel room because the staff are coming to get me. They know what's happening. I've got the curtains drawn. The England team want to come and stay at the hotel. They want me to leave. I've got do not disturb for 4 days. They want to clean the room. I'm frightened to look out the curtains because it's all glass curtains, and they're waiting. They're looking at me behind the curtains. I'm on the 10th floor, but they're waiting for me. They're waiting for me to just move that curtain. That's what they want me to move it. Anyway, so... I ended up in a terrible state in South Africa. I ended up in downtown Johannesburg. I ended up, smoking crack. Well, one person, thank God, who's just got clean. She OD'd. We ended up in a hotel and her OD'ing. And the other guy, I'll mention his name, the last person I ever used with since I got clean again was a guy called Jason who died last year. And he was the last person I used with in South Africa. And the girl that, Tanya, who came and collected me at Heathrow Airport when I got off the plane and I was one day clean, she died of a heroin overdose 4 years ago. And I could go on and on with the amount of people that have helped me who've died since. And thank God I'm still here to tell the story. So I got involved in the steps in a real hurry because people said to me, look, you know, I've been coming to meetings for 20 years. What was I going to hear that I hadn't heard before? I'd heard it all before. But I needed to do something differently. I needed, you know, instead of opening a book and showing you a page, I needed to show you who I really was. And I didn't want to do that for so many years. So I ended up getting involved. I did a thorough step four, which, you know, I hasten to add, I'm not a resentful person. I've always kept my side of the street very clean. And when I did this step four, I got up to 760 resentments. And it was, the guy kept saying to me, you know, if you think of more, add them on. I said, well, keep adding them on, it'll never end. And it went on and on and on and on. I mean, let alone using. I had 20 years of recovery that I could talk about resentments. I had 20 years of meeting people that I didn't like in the rooms to add to the years of using. And, you know, the petty resentments. Anyway, so I read my step five. It was a wonderful experience. The guy fell asleep on numerous occasions. I caught him snoring a couple of times, and he said he didn't. And then a couple of times he said to me, what did he say? A couple of times he would identify. We sobbed in each other's arms. We talked about my mum dying. We talked about some of the terrible things that I'd been ashamed of, no matter how small, to matter how large. We shared all these things together. He listened to me. And he took 2 days off of work. He took 2 days off of work to listen to this crap that went on and on and on and on. And then he took another half day off, which thank God Charlie's given me 5 minutes to talk about my sexual behaviour. And I could tell you, oh God, I won't. I've been drawn to so much insanity clean that it was a dot on the cards that each time I was a relapse waiting to happen. I found, and I've shared this many times before, I found the hardest thing to learn in recovery for this recovering addict is to get used to life in the grey. I want the high, I want the low, but I don't want the grey. And my life has become grey. My life is a bit like Groundhog Day nowadays. And that was the hardest thing to accept, that the thing I needed to do was be normal, was to be okay just being me, okay doing the day-to-day existence and turning up for life on a daily basis. And that man, even though he's not my sponsor now, that man taking that 2.5 days off work and he had a really good job, showed me love that I cannot express to you what it meant to me that someone had given me that time. Not 10 minutes at the end of the meeting or go and share with my sponsor for an hour. This man had given me the time. And it meant the world to me. And I carried on doing the steps and I stayed clean. And I went to meetings I went to loads of meetings in the first year, loads of meetings in the second year. I met my wife, and I certainly, the expression I love saying is that I didn't know what I wanted in meeting a partner, but I had a degree in knowing what I didn't want. I've learned over many years and in many dysfunctional relationships what I didn't want again, and she didn't fall into that category. And we got married, and we're still married. We've been married over 7 years. She'll be 10 years clean in about 6 weeks' time. She's helped me turn my life around. My children have helped me turn my life around. And the biggest thing that's turned my life around is Narcotics Anonymous. I would have nothing, absolutely nothing, if I hadn't have got this. And this has given me the foundation for what I've got in my life today. I've got a few really close friends that I love and adore. I've got three wonderful children. I've got something that I know works. This works for me. I've tried so many different things, you know. I could tell you about Zen monasteries. I could tell you lots of different things. Warriors. I've tried that. That's another chair. And but the only thing that's really, really worked is Narcotics Anonymous. And I love my wife. I love my children. And I've become a good husband. I've been a good father. And this fellowship has helped me become what I wanted to be, which I've never been before. And I owe everything to Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you.